This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Studies have shown that in today's digital world, more consumers are searching for experiences rather than just products. This shift calls for a company's marketing to use creative content and storytelling to promote customer experiences, not just describe the value of specific products or services. In her latest book, Experiences, the Seventh Era of Marketing, consultant, author, and owner of Type A Communications, Carla Johnson, shows how and why marketers should embrace content creation management to increase company value. Carla Johnson joins us along with Gina Bonar, owner of Steady on Sales and president of American Marketing Association Cincinnati, to discuss the importance of creating engaging customer experiences. And you can be part of our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carla and Gina, thank you for being here this afternoon. We appreciate you joining us on the show.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
Carla, start off by explaining this. I find it interesting you call this the seventh era of marketing. So how do we get through the first six eras? How do we get from there to here?
You know, it's been an interesting progression for businesses over, you know, really the last century. As we look at the history of marketing and what its role has been in business, and we started with the trade era, where what we're trying to do is just, I have too much of one thing, let me get it to somebody else who needs it, you know, that kind of rudimentary kind of marketing. Then we look at the production era, where companies started to say, okay, I can actually produce enough and have that to sell and do that with intention and purpose. And then in, around the 1920s, what happened is that companies saw, okay, if we can start to put teams of people that we can send out into the world and that be their responsibility to actually sell, then that's where we start to see it as something that businesses saw. We need to actually do something to activate that purchase process and that decision. And then around right after the Great Depression came about and we kind of got our feet on the ground with business in the early 40s, there came a time when businesses saw a difference between marketing and sales, and they said, okay, we need to have a dedicated department for marketing that tells this story and helps us establish ourselves as a company. And then when we look at that and then moving into companies who are actually recognized as marketing companies, so you think of particularly like Apple in their 1984 Super Bowl commercial that turned it, instead of a device company, people saw it as really a marketing company that was able to tell a story. And then we move into the relationship era that started in the 1990s, which came about when we could have one-to-one conversations with people through some marketing technology that was coming about and social media and the internet. And now as we look at that next evolution of it, what we're seeing is that consumers of any kind of product or service, they look beyond what it is a company is selling and what is it actually like to have an experience by interacting with that company. So that's where and how we got to that seventh era, is that especially with millennials, they care more about the experience of interacting with a brand rather than just having a relationship as a buyer.
So there's still some room for relationship marketing, though, it sounds like. It sounds like these two things just kind of add to each other, or they complement each other?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the four P's of marketing, production in place, those are things that will always be there. But what we're looking for is how do we create and maintain that relationship through something that's a very rich and repeatable experience that brings consumers along in the bigger picture, rather than just how do I have a relationship with somebody who buys my product?
Gina, as a marketer, how important is this concept?
Well, it's critical. It runs through the whole stream. Carla mentioned the four P's. And I think that the glue that ties the four P's together is really the experience of every single touch point, from thinking about what you might need to figuring out who might fulfill that need to having the experience of both purchasing and then using the product or service and maybe telling others for the better or worse. And so experience just is the two-way street and the completely pervasive element of the marketing deal.
Carla, can you give me an example of content-driven experience? What does that mean exactly? What's it look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of examples that I think companies do really, really well. One would be Nike and their fitness app. So you can be a person who has a very deep, rich, continual, emotionally engaging experience with Nike without ever actually being a customer. So you can use their fitness apps, you can get healthy, you can learn about your level of fitness, and you can plan your workouts by using their fitness app, which creates an experience. And that experience is different, unique, and provides a great deal of value that's separate from if you were buying a pair of shoes or a T-shirt or something that like that that's actually a product that Nike sells. Or you look at Johnson & Johnson's Baby Center. So for people who are expecting babies or having young children, this is a tremendous resource. And what it does is help people understand what happens during each trimester of a pregnancy, what happens and what to expect, or what questions do you have in those early years of your children. So that's another example of how they're creating these very rich and valuable experiences. But again, you don't have to buy Johnson & Johnson products to be a part of that experience.
And you mentioned Apple. I mean, how well do they do this?
You know, Apple has a great opportunity because they look at how do we help people think differently. So you can see that in a lot of opportunities in what they provide and help people use and become as far as you can use their products and think differently, but you could also be a part of that bigger community. So in a lot of situations with brands, you don't necessarily have to be a consumer of their product or service, but because you're passionate about the experience that they deliver, you can become an advocate for it, which really amplifies the understanding of the purpose of that brand and what it is that they can deliver as valuable to customers.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because people seem to be willing to pay whatever price Apple sets because they're so sold on the whole Apple experience. Is that a correct assessment?
You know, there's actually research that's been done that if you can create, if you have empathy for your audience and you can create that rich emotional experience and engage them through a story that then is activated through an experience, then your customers become less price sensitive. So I hear a lot of companies say, you know, this sounds really good, but I don't have time to look at what a story is that we tell, how to tell it over a long period of time, how to change our focus on the content that we create to sell our things. I just don't have time to do that because we really have to focus on what it is that we're selling. But there was a New York Times reporter who said, you know, storytelling sounds all well and good, but I'm not sure it actually works. So he did a little bit of a research project himself, and he went to a thrift store, and he bought some real odd things that you would find at a thrift store. I'd say all of them were probably under about $5, such as a plastic banana, an old-style key to a hotel room, you know, before our cards, one that actually goes into a lock and turns, a ceramic horse head coffee mug, quirky things like that. And then he had some of his writer friends write stories about these items, and then they put them on eBay to see how much they would sell for. On average, they sold for 2,700% more.
Wow.
Than what they bought. And so he said, you know, lots of things are flukes, right? It could have just been those particular, you know, maybe somebody was really in the market for a plastic banana that day. Who knows? So he went back and he replicated this example, this, you know, research several other times. And in each case, he had similar results. So what he saw is that through the storytelling, it helped draw people into an experience and added so much more value to this product that he was selling that could never happen if all you did was focus on the features and benefits. So when people look at story-rich content and the need to create experiences, there actually is a tremendous financial outcome that happens when you go down this path.
You know, would you say that online retailers like Etsy and eBay are killing mall shopping because they figured out the storytelling and the experience selling aspect of this whole thing?
I think they've figured out a very key part of it, and that's the ability to draw people into the experience. So they're tremendously successful. But if you look at a store like American Girl, who's all about that bricks and mortar experience, they also are really great at telling that story and bringing people into that experience. So it's not just, is it a digital experience or is it an offline experience? It's truly the integration so that it doesn't matter where somebody touches your brand, whether it's online or offline, they feel like they have a very rich, continuous, integrated experience.
Gina, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Sure. I was thinking about the really critical component of the storytelling. You asked me about the marketer's perspective. And one of the things we all know is that we are a very social society now more than ever, right? We don't sit around campfires as much and talk anymore, although sometimes there's a fire pit involved. But we have every minute of every day 10 different ways we can talk to one or 5 million people at a time. And we do. Consumers do. And retailers do, and manufacturers do. And so capturing those stories and being able to share them and having people speak language that is meaningful to you and vice versa makes a huge difference in the experience of whatever the product and services it are and the way that people buy and interact.
And Carla, you know, I'm thinking of back to some of the old advertising you saw in like the 1950s and 60s, where it seems like the copy, the words themselves, the stories that the ads were telling were probably the biggest element in the ad. And I'm wondering, have we kind of gone full circle in how we do this?
You know, I think particularly in B2B, so business to business, a company that sells to another business rather than a consumer, you see this a lot. So there is, when you look at some of that kind of Mad Men era advertising, it feels very sensational, but what they did really well was capture the essence of what mattered to somebody. And I think what has happened is that we, to your point, we've come full circle in that we've gone away from that thinking it's too sensational, and now we need to do things that are more methodical and automated. And by automating things, lots of times we take out that human connection and that emotion. And now we see that that is so important. So it's helping companies understand, not just marketers, it's helping companies understand that we really have to look at what is the promise that we're making to people, and then how are we actually delivering on that promise when people interact with our brand. So some companies say, you know, we got to get our marketing in place. We have to have our salespeople tell stories. But it's so much bigger than that, because the marketing and the salespeople, they are those frontline people who essentially make the promises. They're the promise makers for our brands. But when it comes to the people who actually keep those promises in an interaction, that's your employees. So that's where we have to look at how are we teaching and training the people who actually deliver the experience to deliver on that promise that we're making.
Do you think that if you take this approach of telling a good story, of providing a good experience, is this a way of staving off customer complaints? Is it a way of satisfying your customers better?
Absolutely. You know, and I think there's a big difference in the mindset between customer experience and customer service, because customer service is how you deal with an experience that didn't meet people's expectations. And so now they have a complaint, it wasn't delivered on, and so now they need to be serviced and taken care of. But you can, the more you focus on what is that rich, integrated, true, helpful customer experience that you deliver, then you'll have less need for a customer service department.
And in this digital age, too, you have to be extra cautious, because how much reach does a customer's complaint have these days? A lot more than it used to.
Absolutely. You know, and then it's the exponential situation of their social network, too.
I wanted to jump in for a second, Carla, and ask you to kind of go back to the beginning that we talked about on May 17th with you at our event, and really thinking about the inspiration of designing a remarkable customer experience, not just letting it unfold before you, because you had some really insightful things to share. Our audience was riveted, so I thought this audience might like to hear that as well.
You know, and this was such a fun time with the AMA Cincinnati chapter, because they are people who are absolutely excited and they love this idea of the ability to design customer experiences. And so when we look at that from a company perspective, lots of times we say, okay, what's the process that someone goes through to buy our product? And then how can we make each of those touch points, you know, nicer, more polite, more helpful, and things like that? And what ends up happening, to your point about how do you stand out and look a little different, is that you end up looking the same as everyone else because you're telling the same story as everyone else. It's just that there's a battle to who can tell it perpetually with incrementally better. But if you really want to stand out in the experience that you create, you say, okay, if I, for example, if Lego, we're building my brand. What would that experience look like? So look at a brand, an Apple, a Zappos, a Southwest Airlines, that you feel delivers an incredible customer experience. And then you look at what are the elements of that experience that really make it amazing. And then start to tie that back into your brand. So for Southwest Airlines, it's very fun, it's very human. They make people laugh, they make people happy. So if you look at how you can connect the dots from what Southwest does into what your own brand does, start to look for opportunities. How can we make people feel happier about doing business with us? How can we make it fun to interact with us? How can we bring out a lot of personality of our brand? Because that's when you start to have the opportunity to stand out in ways that your competitor can never, ever copy, is if you look for inspiration from great experiences that you love yourself and then start designing those experiences with intention and purpose in your own brand.
Monica in Cincinnati joins us with a comment. Hi, Monica.
Hi. This reminded me of a story maybe about 5 years ago or so of a gentleman who wanted to buy a house, but all he had was a paperclip, and he bargained and bartered and traded up to a house. I think like his first exchange was a paperclip for a pencil, and people really just got into the story of it, and eventually he ended up having to like seek out certain things and barter for those things so that he could barter up to the next level. I'm unfortunately in my car, so I can't like find anything on it, but it happened a few years ago. It was really interesting to see how people bought into this man's desire to own a house, and he started with just a paperclip.
So he had a great story. He had a great story.
The best story. So thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Monica. We appreciate the comment. Carla, I guess it's that just shows the power of storytelling.
Absolutely. And, you know, people want to be a part of a story. If you look at things like Game of Thrones, because companies say, well, we have to make sure that our storyline is very simple and easy to follow. But you look at a Game of Thrones, it's an incredibly complex storyline, or Harry Potter or anything like that. And people really get into it and they want to be a part of it. And you see that with Monica's example, is that it's fun, it's quirky, it's different. You have a character to root for. You want to see an outcome. You want to be a part of those challenges and those hurdles along the way. People love that about a story, and they do feel that same way about a brand if you give them that opportunity.
So going back to what Gina's original question was touching on, what does a company do if they want to start moving into this type of marketing?
Well, the first thing that they need to do is that they have to understand that they need to put the purpose of what it is that they're doing as a company over the products and services that they sell. So, for example, Johnson & Johnson understands that the purpose of what they're doing as a company is to help young parents become better parents. So when that's your purpose, that's how they are able to create, design, and deliver an experience like the Johnson Baby Center, because they understand what they're doing is helping parents become better parents. Their first and foremost intention isn't to sell products. But when you put the purpose of what it is that you want to accomplish as a brand and the value that you can deliver because of that, before your products, you will ultimately end up making more money than you will if you push your products first. So we're seeing that with research around purpose-driven brands, that they tend to have higher financial performance, outperform their competitors because they're driven by purpose rather than driven by the desire first to make money.
So what's next, Carla? Is there an eighth era of marketing on the way?
You know, I think we'll have to keep that in mind and watch for it. What I do see is that there is a hunger for brands to relentlessly innovate the experiences that they deliver. So if you look at some of the things that have caught our attention so much in the last few years, things like Uber and the experience they have in transportation, things like Amazon and what they're able to deliver in how you buy pretty much anything. I mean, I know I'm a huge Amazon fan because there's so much that I don't have to leave my house for and go buy, and I can order it and have it show up in 2 days, and I can watch it go from distribution to my house. So how do we continually relentlessly innovate those experiences that we're creating as marketers and see what that really leads us to? And going back to Gina's point about how do we design those experiences and make sure that they continue to unfold with intention and purpose.
And Gina, tell us some about the American Marketing Association Cincinnati, the AMA Cincinnati.
Sure. Well, AMA Cincinnati is part of a broad international organization. We're about 30,000 members across North America in 75 chapters, and AMA Cincinnati is proud to be one of the very top among those. We are award-winning most years.
How many members do you have in Cincinnati?
In Cincinnati, we're about 400 members. Mm-hmm. And we also welcome guests at just about every event that we run. We're quite strong in events. That's our main experience in the community. And we have monthly luncheons, and we have morning conversations that are a little smaller, more intermittent focused. We have happy hours, all sorts of things to keep marketers interested, engaged, growing, connecting, and developing personally and professionally.
Yeah.
Networking,
sounds like
business development, personal development. And we have a lot of great success stories. We have a lot of fun at it, too.
And how long has the AMA Cincinnati been around?
A long, long time. We actually just had that conversation recently. I think it's over 70 years.
Okay.
We've been digging through the archives. The name has changed a few times.
But it's been around for 7 years. Well, you've got some events coming up. Can you tell us about a few of those?
We do. Yeah, well, we're heading into our summer planning season, so we're slightly lighter on events. We do continue our morning shared interest group sessions. Those are regular monthly meetings with different areas of particular interest, and those are all on our website, amacincinnati.org. We also have a really exciting annual awards celebration going on this Thursday, June 8th, at Transept OTR. We still are welcoming registrations for that. We'll be recognizing finalists and winners across several categories, and one brand new one that we just announced the honorees for this morning, in fact, is Cincinnati Marketing Legends. We've identified three professionals in the community, and that was with the help of a lot of input from the community to show the impact. And so that's on our website now, too, if you want to go check out the blog. We're really thrilled to have that as an additional component of our awards ceremony. And also back circling around to customer experience, we are gearing up for our first in a long time full-day conference on the topic of customer experience on September 22nd at Cintas Center. And we'll be featuring a full day of keynote speakers and track sessions, lots of networking, an experience lounge. And we have some member deals going on. So check out our website. And
we have a link to that website at WVXU.org. Mm-hmm. So Carla and Gina, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you joining us.
Great to visit.
Consultant, author, and owner of Type A Communications, Carla Johnson, and Gina Bonar, owner of Steady on Sales and president of American Marketing Association Cincinnati.